Do you add a key on when you got a guy like Kuminga? Like, meaning the type of player? Like, you having a key on is nice, but...
You said, do you...
Like, having key on is great, but if you don't have, like, a Kuminga type or even a number one, like, how much is that helping you, I guess?
I agree. I hear what
you If you get what I'm saying. I know, yeah, not playing in clear terms, but, like, also, like, yeah.
Keon only... I don't want to say Keon only works, but Keon works...
Like,
you maximize him if you have everything else established and ready to go.
Exactly. Like, the impact that we talk about with Keon Allison,
no,
he can have.
I don't think
that's
true.
Do you need everything else to be okay? Better, I guess?
I got an example. I got an example for you. Caruso. Caruso on the Bulls didn't do much of anything for the Bulls. But when he went to OKC and everything was established, it elevated that team and took them to another level.
Did it?
I think I was a little... Like, hey, it's not going to do as much. But in the playoffs, he proved me wrong about his impact on what that team could do.
But how much of that is Caruso versus how much of that is Oklahoma City versus Chicago? Like, it's Caruso's both. Not going to take Chicago to where Oklahoma City was. Mm-hmm. But Caruso can help elevate a really good Oklahoma City team.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same can be true for a marginal team. Like, Keon Ellis can help elevate Sacramento up a little. Keon Ellis isn't your one.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the guy who makes Sacramento a championship contender. But how many times have we watched someone or discussed something someone did the night before or even watched someone at the Golden One Center in opposing uniform and going, man, I'd love to have a such and such on the Sacramento Kings.
To me,
Keon's one of those guys.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that's 100% fair. But we talk to people every day. We read things every day. People think we're a lot, and I won't use OKC. Let's just say the Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
People think the Kings are a lot closer to the Bulls than the Clippers. Like, you're not – what you said is 100% correct. A lot of people don't believe that's where the Kings are. They're not a marginal team. They're not this team that can be elevated to a playoff team by Keon Ellis. They're closer to the Bulls, this sorry middling team that Caruso was on. I agree with you. I just don't think people are talking out of both sides of their mouth now. We can't.
Well, that's what everybody does.
Yeah, we talked so bad about this Kings team and how sorry they're going to be.
Well, we talk about this all of the time. Kings Twitter will bitch and complain about how bad this team is, but they want Keegan back. They want Keon back. They want all of these players back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you really don't like is DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. That's what you don't like.
Right.
Arguably the team's two best players. Whether you like it or not, like, they are. And Domas is in there somewhere. Like, I don't know where, but like those are the Kings' three best players. And so... I think these conversations, there's always a little bit of talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I want Keon on this basketball team. I do not want Keon involved in any trade for Jonathan Kuminga. In fact, if the Warriors ask for somebody, I almost immediately am like, no.
We want Mason Jones.
Unless they ask for Devin Carter. Then it's like, all right, you're twisting my arm. You got it. It's going to cost you a second round pick for us to include him. I don't know, man.
But I agree, and I understand what Jesse's saying. I don't know if the Kings are in a position to greatly benefit from the type of player Keon Ellis is.
Yeah, it's not like about Keon's impact. Like, we all know what he can do and stuff.
I hear you. I just don't know.
I don't even know if the Kings are going to have that the next two seasons to get the most out of Keon, I guess, or just what that can be. And it's like, if you're going to, like, is it just worth it to hold on to that when you're looking for
that? But to me, that's like saying Keon Ellis, players like Keon Ellis can only play on good basketball teams then.
I think
he's good with the Kings, but they're still going to be a 39-42 win team.
Yeah, you feel their impact most, I think, on those teams. Like Caruso went for like 20, I think, in the finals. It wasn't like this massive thing, but it's like, oh, that had a big impact on the game. I think that's where it's felt most.
I absolutely understand the point both of you are making. I just don't see that as a reason to move off from him.
That alone is not. But when you factor in, you can go get this young piece that you can start to build around. That's where it's like, now you're weighing the impact of a guy like that in the situation that you're in compared to kind of jump-starting your future, which is what everybody's, I shouldn't say everybody, a lot of people's number one complaint with this team right now is they have no future. It's just this random group of players that we don't think will be here in 2 years. Well, you're going to get a guy that you are hoping and that's the potential to be here for the next 8 years. That's what you don't have on this roster right now, outside of however you feel about Keegan, Neek, those two guys. That's it.
James texted me a minute ago. He's on the way. He's running a couple minutes behind, but he'll be with us here shortly. It goes back, like, I guess part of the reason I look at the Keon thing is I can see Keon be a part of something that you're building for the future.
I can too.
And that is, I think, one of the biggest signals with a potential Jonathan Kuminga acquisition. Mm. He's not a 28-year-old player. He's not a 30-year-old player. He's certainly not a 35-year-old player. He's a player that you can get onto your team on his rookie extension. And if I understand, if everything goes the way you want to, you now have another building block for 2028 and 2029. Now you can start. You got to move some of the weeds out of the way, but you could start to have a conversation for the first time about a potential future for this team. Now, there'd be a lot of hyperbole. There'd be a lot of hypotheticals and all that. But you could have a discussion. Right now, today, you can't. Mm-hmm. At least I don't believe you can. Unless you're a big Devin Carter fan. Right now, today, there's no conversation to be had about the Sacramento Kings' future. And we talked about the list that ESPN made about the 14 non-playoff teams. We'll get to that tomorrow. But there's a difference between 2026, you know, 2025, 2026, and the future. Mm-hmm. And, yep, this isn't a championship contender, but they're not terrible. You want to have a conversation about their future, and it feels like the Zach Lowe's and all of those different, the Bill Simmons, those guys are having conversations about their future. To me, they're all right.
Right.
They're all right. That conversation can start to shift for the first time with an acquisition of Jonathan Kuminga. You don't lose anything with the loss of Devin Carter, in my opinion. I feel like you lose a little something with Keon Ellis. It doesn't mean the conversation still can't be there. It doesn't mean you still can't talk about the future of this team, but I feel like losing Keon Ellis is detrimental. Let me ask you both something. Do you think you know who Keon Ellis is as a basketball player today? Do you think you know the best version of Keon Ellis, the basketball player, right now?
I think I do.
Yeah, I think I don't think he's hit his ceiling yet, but I think know what that can be. Alex Caruso, like, that type of player feels right.
Better shooting.
That's pretty good, no?
Yeah, better shooting Alex Caruso.
I mean, I don't know if he's necessarily going to get there. But
I guess what I'm... That's good.
That's good.
Also, quick...
You want that.
That's good. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. Absolutely. But, and I'll flip the question on you.
All right.
What does Kuminga's ceiling look like? Just we'll go best case scenario. I'm not saying he's going to reach that, mm-hmm. but what do you envision the best case scenario for Jonathan Kuminga?
I mean,
an all star,
20 plus, double double. Yeah.
It sounds like I'm minimizing guys like Caruso and
you Keanu, very much are,
and I'm not. But would
disagree?
No, but like, would you? Who is that right now? Who is?
I also think there's more to Keon than you guys do.
Potentially.
Like, I don't think the Alex Caruso comp is bad. By the way, I like Alex Caruso. I've always would have loved him on Sacramento, but I mean, last year, like, his coach called him a situational role. What was it? A situational role player?
Yes.
Last situational rotational player, something like that. Last year, Mike.
Yeah, don't listen to that guy.
Oh. That's your coach.
Oh, there was another controversy while you were gone too. And remember, Because my cousins at the family reunion.
Oh, Jesus.
They're not all of them, but there's like a group of the four or five OGs who are Knicks fans.
Okay.
And we were talking. I was like, I support the Knicks, man. It's love, man. I want to see them succeed. Not more than the Kings, but I want to see them succeed.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, okay, no doubt. Look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put you in our Knicks group chat. You know what I'm saying? We're going to put you in the group chat, big dog. And they thought that was a violation.
I got two things. I mean, three, I guess. Yes, that's horrible. We shouldn't be in the Knicks fan group chat.
You're a Knicks fan.
Tyler brings up Derek White for Keon Ellis. I don't see that. Like, Derek White got 36 in a playoff game in his second season. No. And then also, we're talking Keon Ellis, future Kings, future that.
Let's bring in James.
How confident are we signing an extension with the Kings?
Well, let's ask James. James, these two hate Keon Ellis.
Not true.
Lazy Barley.
What do you, and I guess this is probably a really important place to start, James. It feels like a lot has happened. I don't know that anything has actually happened, but it feels like a lot has happened since we last talked at 12:15. What are the odds Keon Ellis is with Sacramento for the foreseeable future?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Like, to be honest with you, I don't know. I know that, you know, clearly there was some unhappiness about him, about them picking up his option.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to be honest, I think at this point it might have played out better for him that they didn't make him a restricted free agent, because we're watching that unfold and it's really ugly. But the Kings also would not have had any cap space to go out and do anything. So it would have eaten up all of the buffer they have between the salary cap and the luxury tax if they would have paid Keon. And, like, look, deep down, I think the Kings in a perfect world would have loved to have just given Keon a four-year deal, like, right now. They would have already, like, a four-year deal for this season that started this season. But that's just not the dynamics of their cap space and where they were when they had to make the decision on Keon. And I think part of it was timing, and I think part of it is, like, just look at the restricted free agent market. It's just a disaster. I mean, Josh Giddey and, you know, like Kuminga, but, you know, Cam Thomas and, you know, all these guys are just stuck in limbo. And Keon very well could have been in that same exact position. The one difference I would point out, though, is that I think maybe Quentin Grimes is in the same bucket that Keon would be, around the same price tag. But outside of that, like Kuminga and Giddey, like Cam Thomas, they're all hoping for way more than that, right? Mm-hmm. Cam Thomas, like the blatant disrespect from the Nets, where they're like, hey, we'll offer you $14.1 million, which is a mid-level exception, on a one-year deal with a second-year team option. That's like a really, really tough negotiating, like, starting point. Keon is probably a player who's going to make $12 to $15 million. 12 to 14 million in restricted free agency or as a free agent. That's sort of like his zone, maybe a little bit less than that, maybe a 4 year 40. So it's possible that some team that's out there that's really good, that still had their mid-level, would have said, hey, we're going to go try to get Keon. But if the Kings made it known that they're going to match any offer, then, you know, Keon would have been in the same position that all these other guys would be, you know, outside of maybe the Nets taking a big swing at him and stealing him away. But even that isn't, like, I don't think that's part of their team build philosophy.
James, before you came in, we were discussing, like, the ceilings and what we, you know, some of these players could potentially be. We're talking Keon again, too. And we said Keon Ellis, you know, what if he maximized and turned into Alex Caruso, which I think is plausible. Like, he could do that. That's a valuable person. And we were trying to figure out, like, Kuminga's ceiling, what would that look like? Maybe agree or don't disagree. But what if Kuminga turned into Jaylen Brown?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have Jaylen Brown or Alex Caruso to kind of start your franchise moving forward?
Yeah, Go ahead.
I mean, if we're starting like a franchise, then I'd prefer, like, you know, the 22-year-old potential superstar, potential all-star. If, you know, I'm the Sacramento Kings and you're trying to build or trying to take that next step like they were 2 years ago, then Caruso would have made a ton of sense. And they actually chased Caruso And that would have just made like a absolute ton of sense for this team to go out and get a defensive minded guard like that. So I think it depends on where you're at and your team build, what's the average age of your team, all of that stuff. But yeah, I get the point. Like, one is a role player and an established, like, extremely good role player. The other one is a player who hasn't accepted a role, and you're wondering what his role can be, what his ceiling can be. And, you know, the question is always going to be, hey, look, if Jonathan Kuminga, you don't end up being as good as you think you are, will you accept being someone less than that? And not as in, like, accept it and be happy about it, but accept that, you know, you have to turn yourself into something different, whether it's like an Aaron Gordon or a John Collins or one of those types of players. And, you know, to date, I don't think Kuminga's got the opportunity with the Warriors to feel like he's fulfilled this dream of becoming something more. And so he's left in this weird limbo, which, to be honest with you, we don't see very often. I mean, there are players out there that, you know, you get 4 years into their career and they still, you know, I remember talking to Jason Thompson in like year seven, and he's like, man, I just want like 12 shots per game. It's like, bro, you ain't ever getting 12 shots per game. You went to Fenerbahce and didn't get 12 shots per game. You know, that's not being disrespectful. That's just like your lot in life in the NBA. And that's okay. But if you're unwilling to accept that, then you find yourself out of the league. I remember Omri Caspi told me one time, he said, you know, he left the Kings, he went to the Cavs, did not have a good time with the Cavs. And there was expectations on him that were different. And then he left there and he went to Houston, and he was like, I sat down with Kevin McHale, and Kevin McHale said, look, this is who you will be in the league. And if you don't be this player, you're going to be out of the league very quick. And if you don't accept this role and you don't try to flourish in this role as a 3-and-D guy, a guy who stands in the corner and accepts your role and goes and grabs some rebounds, and every once in a while you get a fast break and stuff like that. But if you won't accept that, you're going to find yourself in the unemployment line, and you're going to find yourself playing in Europe, or you're going to find yourself playing somewhere else. And that's going to be on you. It's not on us. We're here. We have our team. We have our players that we have, you know, tiers of players, like Kyle Madsen likes to tier everybody. And this is where you're at and what tier you're at. And we need you to play to your strengths and be that player. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine. We'll find another place for you. But if you do want to be that, we think we can elongate your career and make you into a ball player that keeps getting paychecks. And Omri said, I accepted it because it was like the honest truth. And it was with my own best interest in mind. And once I accepted that, it was a lot easier to move forward and be a really good role player.
I also think this whole conversation is unfair because that is a massive if. If Jonathan Kuminga becomes Jaylen Brown.
Well, we talked about what a ceiling is, right? You know, I mean, not saying that's you, but we talked about like what a ceiling is. Like probability, he's probably more around Gerald Wallace.
So
like that's what I would bet. Sure.
But so if we went like over the top with the idea of Jaylen Brown, I'll go over the top with Keon Ellis and say Derek White, right? We'll go back to the thing Jesse brought up earlier. Those two needed each other to win a title. Mm-hmm. And I think that's my point is I feel like Keon can be a part of a future build for the Sacramento Kings, which is why I don't want to lose him. And I think the most important part for me right now is I don't feel like they have to. That's the part that's killing me. Like, if you want to get the deal done just to get it done, then fine. Maybe you do it. Maybe. And if Kuminga is that important to you, fine. But I also look at it like, who are you bidding against? It's you're basically in a game of chicken with Golden State. You don't want him to play on this qualifying offer because you don't want to lose the ability to trade him. You don't want the ability to get back a draft asset or even a you look. They may think Devin Carter isn't very good, but that's fine. You're still getting back a young player that you can at least find out that he's not good.
Right.
Otherwise, you get nothing. You also have the oldest basketball team in the league. You're going to need somebody to play professional basketball for you in game 60, 70, and 80 of the season. And so I'm completely okay with Scott Perry just going, all right. And there's James, do you think this thing really could draw out till October 1st?
I don't think so. I mean, we always, like, you would hope that it would get figured out quicker. I'll tell you this, too. Like, you brought up Devin Carter. And, like, one of the player comps for Devin Carter is Gary Payton II. Like, this is a guy that the Warriors might be able to use, that he might fit in what they're doing. But, again, I think with the Warriors, a lot of times you're looking at it in the same way that you're looking at the Kuminga situation. Like, hey, the word on the street is he doesn't really want to play a role, that he thinks he's better than what his role is and what his role might be. And that makes it extremely difficult, right? Because, you know, it's much easier for the Warriors to go out and sign an Al Horford, Seth Curry, and who's the other guy they're looking at that they have locked up, the kid who blew out his knee Melton. Last year. What's that?
Melton.
Oh, yeah, Melton. Right? So if you're looking at, like, those players know exactly who they are, and the Warriors are accepting those players and plugging them into a situation that they think that they can flourish, because those players have proven that they can flourish in those roles at other spots. So when you're taking on a young player like Devin Carter, like, you're going to have to see if he fits your system or not. You're going to have to see if he's an NBA player or not. But again, great rebounder, long wingspan, huge hops. Like, again, Gary Payton II is one of those guys who really, he does look like as a player. And you, if in the right situation, you might be able to figure out how to convert him into that player. But it comes down to, like, players being willing, because, you know, again, if Devin Carter doesn't figure out how to be that player very quickly, he's not going to be in the league. Mm-hmm. And that's a, you know, it's a tough reality. Every single year, there are 30 first round picks that have guaranteed money coming in. That means that 30 dudes that were in the league the year before lose their jobs. You know, they're not making more jobs. That you're just out. And it's sort of the tough reality. And it doesn't matter if you're the 13th pick or you're the 28th pick in the first round, you're fighting for your NBA job every single time you're on the court. And so look, I know Golden State has a bunch of wants, needs, and all that stuff, but at the same time, like, they got themselves into this situation, and it's on them to figure out how to get out of it. But trying to strong arm somebody, using the press to strong arm somebody, like, none of this seems like it's going to work out all that well for anybody involved.
The thing that baffles me about the Warriors POV in this situation is, and Warrior fans, is the notion that, yeah, we'll just bring him back on the qualifying offer. Like, that's literally the worst case scenario for the Warriors, and that's the dumbest case scenario. You've done all of this and turned down all these deals that you say aren't good enough and that you don't want to take, just to bring him back on a qualifying offer where he's going to leave in X amount of months anyway, and he has a no-trade clause, so you don't have any control of it and you don't get anything back. That would, if you're a Warriors fan, that's the last thing you should be rooting for, not celebrating, oh, we'll just bring him back on the qualifying offer. That would be dumb. It'd be stupid.
It'd be dumb. It'd be stupid. And the second that he rolls an ankle and takes 12 weeks to come back from a rolled ankle, because he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year and has no reason to rush back, like, that's a problem. And it's a problem that you created. And I get the system in place. The system in place is to preserve, you know, your draft picks, or it's to make it so when you draft somebody, you realistically don't just get them for their first 4 years, mm-hmm. but really your first eight, mm-hmm. if you want them. And it's to build continuity in the league. It's so you can sell more jerseys. It's so, you know, it's just good for the league. But this situation here isn't good for anybody, because, like, let's be clear, the Golden State Warriors are being very obvious that they don't want him back. I mean, when you offer a 2-year deal and the second year is a team option, that means that you don't intend to keep that team option. That's what they're doing. Right. They're like, right. They're hoping that some much bigger trade comes along and that they can take him as a $20 million trade ship and go deal him. But that's where I think the October 1st date really does start to come into play. Because if he pushes until October 1st, and that's when he signs his deal, then I believe that they cannot trade him this season. I mean, they can't trade him anyways, because, they can't trade him if he's on a if he's playing for the qualifying offer. He can turn down any trade, because as soon as he gets traded, his Larry Bird rights end. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trading him to, say, a team like the Kings, the best they can do is offer him the mid-level exception of $14 million because they're over the cap. And so it puts him in a really bad situation. If you give him the one-year deal, you can trade him, but you have that six-month window, right? So if he pushes this out till October 1st and says, fine, I'll sign the two-year $45 million deal, that deal won't be available to him anymore because they're going to be like, nah, we're good. We don't, because now we can't trade you. Mm-hmm. So remember how Lauri Markkanen last year waited and waited and waited until that one date where they're like, if he signs it today, he can be traded before the deadline. If he signs it tomorrow, he cannot be traded until next offseason.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the same exact situation here, but just a little bit different.
James, did you get the opportunity to see what Mark Spears said on television today regarding Jonathan Kuminga and the Sacramento Kings?
I didn't listen to it. I did hear like a snippet from Kyle.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the most important part that you heard. He talked pretty extensively about, one, Jonathan Kuminga's preference out of Sacramento and Phoenix is to come to Sacramento. And he laid out the reasons why. And it's the fact that Sacramento has clearly defined what they believe Jonathan Kuminga's role would be with this Kings basketball team. And that includes starting at the four position alongside Keegan at the three and Domas at the five. And Mark did not say this on television. We're working through this ourselves. That leads me to believe that Zach LaVine is at the two. Dennis Schroeder is at the one. And at least for the time being, for the first time in 15 of his 16 seasons, DeMar DeRozan will go to the bench. And let's start with that component. What do you think of Mark Spears or perhaps the Sacramento Kings laying out the fact that they have a very prominent role ahead for Jonathan Kuminga should this all happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Like Kyle and I have been like beating this drum. I've been coming on your show for the last, like, I don't know, maybe 4 years talking about needing length and athleticism at the wing. When you're looking at Kuminga and you're looking at the skill set that he has, the athleticism that he has, this is the type of player that every other team in the league has a bunch of, and the Kings don't. So I think he's a switchable forward. I think he can play the three and the four. Him and Keegan Murray would be able to just like seamlessly switch between players, right? So I get the reason why Kuminga makes sense to them. And I also think that like when you're getting a 22-year-old player with like the sky is the limits, you're bringing in somebody who that you want to get out there and play major minutes. You know, you're not going to concern yourself with everything else. I mean, hopefully he's healthy and would be able to play, you know, 75 to 80 games, but you know, this is a player that should be able to seamlessly fit into your rotation. Is he a perfect fit? No. You know, he's not a great three-point shooter. He shot, I think, 37% in his second year, but hasn't come close to that since. But I also don't think he's been happy, and I don't think he's been a player who's been put in a position to succeed. And, you know, I think when you're looking at the Warriors and how they design their team, like, he's an afterthought for them. And that's just a reality. He's a total afterthought. So you got to figure out a way to kind of fit him in if you're the Warriors. But with the Kings, it's like, hey, man, go out there, play 34 minutes. Show me what you got. Like, this should be a fun adventure. And you would drop your age considerably.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the dollars and cents we can probably discuss when we get back from the break.
Well, I can't lay out the dollars and cents for Scott Perry, but I know if Jonathan Kuminga wants to come up to Sacramento, man, we'll take him out to West Sacramento. We'll take him out to Baker Family Wines.
That's right.
We'll introduce him to the Hall of Famer Dusty Baker and the coach of the Nicaraguan national team.
Yep.
Because he just can't stop managing baseball teams.
It's in his blood.
He just can't. If he's not making the best wine in the city, he's managing baseball teams. You could join Dusty's Clubhouse for exclusive releases and tasting room specials. I strongly encourage you to do that. Head over to BakerFamilyWines.com right now. Plan on visiting the taste room. This wine is absolutely spectacular. If you've been paying attention to the show over the last year and some change, you know I've hit my LeBron era. I'm drinking wine in 2025, and some of the best bottles I have especially this 2022 Pinot Noir. This is one of my favorites right here. It's from Baker Family Wine. Dusty Baker, his crew, Chip, they have put some incredible work into this. Head over to BakerFamilyWines.com right now. Join Dusty's Clubhouse and make your plans to visit the tasting room. Not in Napa, not in Amador County, not in Lodi. It is right here in West Sacramento. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a lot more about this King situation with Jonathan Kuminga, with James Hamm when we return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. This is an interesting show.
Always.
Very interesting work dynamic we've created.
Are you guys
here
live right now?
No, the crazy thing is, hey, you guys live right now? What's good? What's good?
No, Mark, no, just talking Kings.
Mark coming in to talk. You guys live? Yep. Charlie sitting in here waiting for me earlier. Oh, are you back?
Oh, no, that was the best part. Casey's like, yeah, we're coming back, Charlie. Charlie's just standing there still.
I still don't know what you... No, Charlie looked like he had something important to say.
No, yeah, clue. Welcome to Jurassic Park. That's what he had. Medulla oblongata.
Oh, well, might have been that, too. Might have been that, too.
Shout out to D-Lo. Giants loss.
I'm not going to lie. As soon as he changed it, put it back on, it just all went downhill. Like I said, he put the game on, immediate four-pitch walk. Tried to turn two. Couldn't make that happen. Literally play after that. Pirates still second.
Hammer, it turns out I appear to be bad luck. Now, I do want to... I didn't watch the San Francisco Giants for a week and a half.
Yeah, can't put the whole damn season on.
Let's just say it's been a long time since I've seen them win a baseball game, though. We'll say that. In fact, the last one I think I saw was the comeback. It was the Rockies comeback.
Oh, man. That's even sad, too. We needed a comeback against the Rockies.
That was tough.
Jesus.
That was tough. I haven't seen them win in months.
Oh, man. These guys have ruined the summer. Yeah. When is football?
I could tell James was tweeting. That's why we were talking about baseball. I knew you were working on something. And there it is, the Daquan two-way contract right there.
Hit the Quan?
Hit the Quan. Quan. It's back, baby.
Yeah, let's go. The first one to return.
Yeah, the first one didn't last too long, but it's all good.
That spelling is going to kill me every single time he makes an appearance.
I haven't really seen it. So let me, can I try?
Daquan? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
D-A-Q-W?
Nope.
Damn.
Nope. You want to try it again?
D-A-Q-U.
Nope.
D-A-Q-E?
Nope.
Damn. Nope.
I actually love this game. You want to try again?
D-A-Q.
Nope.
Oh,
Jesus.
You've said some right letters, though, in the iterations.
D-A-W?
Nope.
Nope. Right,
I'm out.
See, I love this.
There's a W in there, though.
You used it in a sentence. That's a good, that's funny.
D-A-E.
Oh, no.
Q-W-O-N.
Damn.
Daquan.
We should have been able to read it. Daquan, the Sacramento Kings signed Daquan Plowden to a two-way contract after an impressive summer league showing.
It makes perfect sense now looking at it. Okay, I see Daquan.
What is the origin? Like, you got me. Is there another spelling? Yes, there is.
Hammer in this. Yes, yes, James. There are other spellings for sure. Hell, Daquan Jeffries didn't spell his name like that.
No, forgot how Daquan.
I think it was D A Q. Was there a U in Daquan?
I think it was D A
A U
U U. No, D A Q U A N. Daquan.
Yeah,
Daquan. No, this is the blackest segment of the day. That's for sure.
See, as Kings fan since 1985 says. You think Casey would figure out that Q isn't the third letter. They let me cook like past Q a couple times. That's what messed me up. I said like Q A and they were like, no. That's when I said A. So I kept saying Q and Q wasn't even a third letter. Damn.
That
I'm gonna get it now. I'll never forget it now though.
No, I bet you won't.
Spell it right now.
D A E Q.
I knew
Q W. E-O-N.
No!
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 Damn! Damn! Just, well, the E must not be there.
So what is it? Spell it.
D-A-E.
Yep.
Q-W-O-N.
There it is.
Yay!
Oh, man. James, in situations like we're seeing right now, this is a it's an interesting situation regarding a restricted free agent. Normally there's offer sheets in play and things like that. Those are not in play for Phoenix. Those are not in play for Sacramento, and Golden State is working off this qualifying offer thing. You also have the kind of unique component that they don't really want Jonathan Kuminga. And so that adds a whole wrinkle to this. And there's, you know, the word leverage has been used a lot over the course of the last 3 weeks or so since this story first started to percolate. James, I'll ask you, who do you think has the leverage in this situation? The Warriors, the Kings, Jonathan Kuminga? Feels like the Suns are just here, but like, who really has the leverage in this?
I think the really uncomfortable answer is absolutely no one. No one has the leverage because there are two teams out there. So it's not like the Kings aren't competing against somebody else. The Suns' offer is not good. The Kings' offer is not what you would consider good for the type of player that Kuminga could potentially be. Like the Warriors are not in a good position because Kuminga can just play for $7.9 million. Kuminga's not in a good position because if he does that, you know, he gets to the end of the year and he's an unrestricted free agent in a draft class that has a bunch of other unrestricted free agents from the previous season, plus a bunch of new restricted free agents, plus a bunch of new free agents that are available, you know, and so you're always going to be wondering, will he get his money back? And in a market where the NBA is lowering the salary cap increase from 10% to 7%. Mm-hmm. So like, look, I don't think anyone is in a particularly great spot. I do get, you know, the Kings holding their line and saying, hey, look, this is, we're not going to add Keegan. We're not going to add Keon. We're not going to add Isaac Jones. At least at this point, we haven't heard any of those names being mentioned. But, you know, you are in kind of this weird spot where, like, nobody is super comfortable with their spot, with what's happening. You know, Kuminga does not want to. He would much rather play, just like Keon Ellis doesn't want to play for $2 million. He wants to play for $25 to $28 million, right? Maybe $30 million. That's what he was hoping to play for. And, you know, I think everybody's expectations have to change just a little bit. But if you want the deal done, you know, we even hear this thing now that has been floated that the Warriors want an unprotected first round pick from the Kings as opposed to the, you know, the pick that they're a protected pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, both of those things have like their pluses and minuses, right? Because the Kings don't have a lot of sweetener to add to the back end of a protected first round pick. So it could end up being like the J.J. Hickson deal from years ago where literally took like 5 years before that pick got actually traded, which was miserable. Like the Kings were stuck basically in the Stepien rule and couldn't trade their picks out in front of them at all for 5 years because they had this protected pick that they were dealing with.
Yeah, we don't have to even go that far back. We can deal with this stupid-ass Kevin Huerter trade, which soured me on damn near all conditional. Like I know it's not, just take the pick. I don't want to do a conditional pick anymore after dealing with that nonsense. I'm cool off that.
Well, to that point really quick, Casey, the Kings do have their, you know, like, hey, they could tell the Warriors, hey, how about we do this? How about we do a game of chance? We'll give you an unprotected 2027 San Antonio Spurs pick that's, if it goes beyond 16, you lose it. If it's 1 through 16, you get to keep it. And it's not our pick, so we don't have any reason to tank for you. It's the Spurs pick. But, you know, the Kings have already traded the backside of that pick. And so it's like, hey, if it like relays to you, it relays to you. If not, you get nothing. Or you could just give him the 2031 Minnesota Timberwolves pick, and it's unprotected. But there's just so much value in an unprotected pick, and that's kind of not where the Warriors are coming from, a place of value.
Well, James, me and Damian, we talked about it on the complete opposite end of that spectrum. It's like, we can give you the 26 pick because we don't believe, even with all the negativity around the Kings, that they're going to be some 25-win team. Like, we don't – they still have talent on the roster. And even last year, they won 40 games. They lost in the first game of the play-in. They were a 9 seed, whatever it was. That ended up being number 14 pick that they had to give away. If, just to say, you recreate the same scenario again this season – I'd give you the 14 pick in 2026 as opposed to, I don't know what this team's going to look like in 2029, 2030. And I mean that in a negative way. I'm not giving you an unprotected pick later in this draft process. I'll give it to you right now, where I don't think we're going to be like bottoming out.
Okay, so you don't think they're going to be bottoming out, but I mean, let's be real. Vegas has them at 35.5 wins. That's like the 7th or 8th pick in the draft. Like, and Jonathan Kuminga, like, to be honest with you, at this point in his career, is not worth the 7th or 8th pick in the draft. He's not. And part of that, you know, straight up, it's on the Warriors. Like, you're not trading like the 7th pick in the draft or the 6th pick, whatever he was. You're trading a player who's been in the league for 4 years and had all kinds of ups and downs and was out of your rotation at one point in the playoffs. Like, and then you had to bring him back because you had an injury and he was incredible. But before that, like, what we're going to believe, a showcase in the playoffs that make it so, and you didn't win the playoff series. So like, what are we basing his value off of? And like what we were talking about earlier, like there's a tremendous amount of value in the pick before there's a name attached to it. And once a player has been in the league for 4 years, you don't usually get, you know, dollar for dollar value for them. You're going to get 40 cents on the dollar, which is why the offers are what they are at this point, especially because of the complexities of a deal where base year compensation and, you know, all of this other stuff, the restricted free agent status and all that stuff is still in play.
The Suns won 36 games last year. Portland won 34. They were the 10th and 11th picks.
Yeah, but I mean, it changes from 1 year to the next. And like, look, that what if you win, luck out and win the lottery? Like, you don't want to give up the top 3 pick for a player that you don't know. Like, if I'm the Kings, I'm not trading my 26. I'm certainly not trading my 27. And I even have a tough time trading my 28.
See, I'm not trading anything beyond that. Those are the ones that I'm not trading. Once you get to 28, 29, and you got DeMar and those are the ones we're not getting rid of.
Because I'll give you this scenario here. You get to the 2027 season. Everybody's off the books. We didn't trade DeMontis Sabonis. We have no veterans here.
This escalated quickly.
Well, I'm just saying, like, don't want to be here if we're sorry. No. So you're trading him for assets. You're just a sorry team. And now you don't have your first round pick in 27 or 28. Like, that's very, I think that's a very real possibility.
I know Vegas has them at 35, James, or whatever it was, 38. I feel like this team can make the playoffs. Like, they're not making a run to the conference finals or winning a championship, but could they get in through the play-in? Could they get a 6 seed? Like, this team, we overvalued last July. They underperformed, you know, last April. They could meet somewhere in the middle. Now, I don't know that middle gets them to 48 wins, but does it get them to a better version of the basketball team that they were last year? Yeah, maybe. I don't know that I can say that for 2027 or 2028. You know, Scott's got a lot ahead of him to do, but do I feel like this team could win some games in 2026? I do.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm like, after this discussion, I'm probably rolling the dice on one of those other 2 picks, the picks that aren't yours.
Sure. Like, but I mean, that's fine.
And if I was the Warriors, I'd hang up. Why do I want that Spurs pick that might not even happen?
Well, you could also do something like this. You could say Spurs pick. You could say the Spurs pick, and if the Spurs pick doesn't relay, we'll give you an unprotected Minnesota Timberwolves pick. Keep your own picks because, like, look, I think the potential of the Spurs being better than the Kings is realistic. I think the potential of Minnesota in 2031 being better than the Kings is very realistic. We don't know for sure, but that's kind of like it's the tough gamble here that you're going to take as a franchise. Like if you are going to try to add a player and, you know, it takes something to get something. And then on top of that, we've talked about this a little bit. Top of that, if you make the Kuminga trade and it doesn't include one of your, you know, $18 to $25 million players, somebody's got to go because you're way over the luxury tax and you're pushing on the first apron. And so that means you got to make another corresponding move to somehow clear up space, whether that's, you know, again, Malik Monk going somewhere else, whether that's, you know, DeMar DeRozan going somewhere else. Somebody has to go in that scenario if they're not part of the trade to actually acquire Kuminga.
You know, we talked a little bit a second ago about leverage and all this other stuff. And I'll flip the words just a little bit, you know, because, James, you talked about how nobody really has any leverage. I'd flip it a little bit and say everybody has their own little piece of leverage, right? Like,
yeah,
Kuminga has a little say-so in how this goes about it because he's got different deals that he can sign and no trade clauses. The Warriors, as dumb as it would be, they don't have to make a deal.
Right.
They can just hold on to him. The team would probably, and the group with the least amount of leverage, honestly, is probably the Kings. Because they're dependent on everybody. They're dependent on Kuminga wanting to come here. They're dependent on the Warriors deciding to trade him and everything. And all they can do is offer what they can offer. But they don't have any real say-so in how this plays out. So I think the leverage the Kings do have is the market and being able to not, you know, go crazy with a trade proposal. But I think everybody has their own little value of leverage in this situation.
I would actually flip it and say, like, I think the Kings have leverage because they can just walk away and it's, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You had conversations that didn't work out, upwards and onwards. Let's see what the season looks like. I think the Warriors, again, if he accepts the qualifying offer, or he signs a 2-year 45, but demands that the second year is a player option, not a team option. Like, all of these things could, like, I just don't see them having a lot of ways to get better. And the reason why they're doing this right now, why they're holding everybody hostage, is super, super specific. They want to have a $20 million player to trade midseason.
Right.
Because as of right now, they've got nothing. You know, they've got, like, they've got their top-end heavy contracts. We talked about this the other day, but, like, they have, you know, of course, Steph and then Jimmy Butler. And, you know, so they've got two top end contracts. Then the next one is Draymond Green at $26 million. But then Moses Moody makes 11.5 and Buddy Hield makes 9.2. And then they drop all the way down to $3.6 million. So let's say, I don't know, LeBron James becomes available during the season. Well, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but, you know, if you could package Moody and Kuminga and Buddy Hield, plus first round picks and stuff, maybe you get that deal done. But if you don't have a Kuminga on the roster, then you don't have that $20 million contract to trade for a $50 million player. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to make the deal. So, I mean, again, if you take away, if you're not going to trade Steph, Jimmy, or Draymond Green, then to piece together a deal that would get you to the salary that LeBron James makes, it literally would take every player on your roster outside of that. You would have to go Moody, Hield. That puts you at like right at $20 million. Then Podziemski at $4 million. Guy Santos at 2.2. Like, you don't have any contracts, any money to send out in a LeBron James trade. And so that's where I think the Warriors keep centering this thing. And it's also why they should probably figure out a way to swing a deal that includes either a DeMar DeRozan or a Malik Monk, because then they would have that contract to trade if they can't keep Kuminga at $20 million. But that's all they're looking for. We always talk about like the trade exceptions being a coupon, they're looking at Kuminga as like a coupon that can play here and there. But they're not going to want him to get hurt or anything else, because then they won't be able to trade him.
That's why Kuminga's team told the Warriors to go to hell.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I perfectly agree with that, I very much agree with that, Hammer. We also speculated. We wondered if this thing with Jonathan Kuminga were able to get done, or perhaps there was a resolution that landed with Kuminga being elsewhere. If this would start some sort of effect for the Sacramento Kings, and you mentioned DeMar DeRozan and some of these other guys, maybe once this transaction is complete, there are other moves ahead for them to make. We go back to the DeMar DeRozan thing. DeMar DeRozan has played damn near 1,200 basketball games in his career. The only games that he hasn't started in 12 of those 1,200 some odd games, all 12 of them were in his rookie season 16 years ago. And so the idea that you're just going to casually move a player like DeMar DeRozan, whose play has not declined, to the bench, I think it's interesting. I also think maybe you have a discussion with him and his agent about potential destinations for him across the league. Miami's the one that comes up a lot. I believe there were discussions there, but they weren't any good. But I wonder if there's a next chain of events that gets set off, or a chain of events that gets set off for Sacramento, should a resolution be reached in this Jonathan Kuminga situation.
Yeah, that's going to be the next step. Like, what's the ripple effect? And, you know, again, we keep hearing Malik Monk's name mentioned all over the place. It's going to be easier to move DeMar, I think, because he's only got 1 year and then a buyout at $10 million,
yeah,
than it would be to move Malik Monk. And it's easier to move DeMar at $24.5 million or $25 million for a $15 million player than it is to move Monk for like an $8 million player. Cause you got to remember, you got to clear up that cap space at $10 million bucks. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, everyone's like, oh, they'll just sign Russell Westbrook. But like, then they need another $2.2 million or whatever to free up to make sure they don't go over the luxury tax if they're going to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So I definitely could see a play where they did something like, I said this earlier, but DeMar for Terrence Mann, where you're going to a team that has, you know, salary cap, plenty of salary cap to work with, but also, so they can absorb more contract coming in, but also they've got a player who is, you know, 15 and a half and $16 million over the next 3 years. So you're going to take back more contract, but you're going to, clear up a bunch of flexibility this year, and even take on a little bit more next year, like $5 million versus a 10 that you would have had for a buyout for DeMar. And then that third year, you're putting up $15-16 million that you don't have on your books right now. And so that's where it gets a little complicated. But the other thing someone brings up, you can waive and stretch Devin Carter. That doesn't make an impact on the Kings, but waiving and stretching DeMar DeRozan, and I'm not saying they're going to do that, but you might be able to get him to take less money on that second year buyout, and then stretch his money over 3 years, because that's, you know, that would free up $16 million bucks that you don't have right now.
I think Dame Lillard broke people's brains. Like, that does not happen very often. The wave and stretch, like, that does not happen a lot. But it happened to Dame. Obviously, that was a stunning amount of money. And all of a sudden, everyone's like, oh, just wave and stretch everyone. Pause.
Brad Bill.
Not what they did, is it? Didn't they buy him out?
Just flat. No, they used to stretch provision.
What was that?
That was me sneaking away and cut the podcast. What? You're gonna wave and stretch everyone? I don't think so. Not on this show.
Yikes.
My bad.
Egads.
That's my bad. You know what? Oh, man. Let's just end it. It's fine. We'll just end on that note. That's my bad. Well, I guess we'll. Obviously, don't expect anything to happen tonight, but we'll see what happens over the course of the next few days. Man, it'll certainly create some fun conversations as they center around the Sacramento Kings. And James Hamm and Kyle Mattson will be here to cover it all, beginning tomorrow at 10 a.m. here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos, wave and stretch.